inspires both action and introspection.
From October 14th through November 3rd, we celebrate The Circle Unbroken, 47 years of being in the community with WPFW during our Fall Pledge Drive. We invite you to be in community and solidarity with us by making a donation at WPFWFM.org to ensure that this independent grassroots media outlet not only survives, but thrives. It is with your generous support that we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county. From another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around, turn around. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to Crossroads and to all our listeners around the world and in this country and out of the country. We want to thank you for your calls, your emails, and your support to keeping Crossroads on air for as long as we've been on for 16 years. We open up with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Oh, I'm good.
He said it's good.
The hidden barriers to voting while unhoused. Turnout is low among people experiencing homelessness, a result of restrictive registration laws, political dissatisfaction, and a misconception that they are not allowed to vote. In preparation for the November election, the downtown evening soup kitchen in New Haven, Connecticut, has begun incorporating a voter registration information into the intake process at their drop-in resource center. Many unhoused people, according to the executive director, didn't realize that they can vote without a permanent address. The perception of eligibility is the biggest stumbling block, he said. Restore your vote. I have a felony conviction. Can I vote? Many people wonder, can I vote with a felony conviction? And assume the laws have restricted their rights, but that's not true. While many states have some restrictions on felon voting rights, most states restore the right to vote to citizens after they complete their sentences. In fact, up to 18 million Americans with past criminal convictions can vote right now. 18 million, and they just don't know it because the felon disenfranchisement laws in every state can be confusing. Mass death looms. Florida refused to evacuate prisons and jails ahead of Hurricane Milton. As Hurricane Milton barreled toward Florida, thousands of incarcerated individuals were left to face a death sentence. With no evacuation plan, Florida incarcerated were abandoned in the storm's path. Just weeks ago, during Hurricane Helene, prisoners in North Carolina were left locked in their cells, ankle deep in water and feces, without power, clean water, or adequate food. We thought we were going to die there, one man recalled. He described the moment he realized his single occupancy cell in the state prison had begun to flood. Then he realized that his toilet no longer flushed. And as a result of that, as nearby residents sought refuge from the storm, the men were stuck in prison by definition without the freedom to leave, in close quarters with their own excrement for nearly a week. Loved ones of men incarcerated in Mountain View claimed food rations were scarce, amounting to 4 crackers for breakfast, a cup of juice or milk, and 2 pieces of bread with peanut butter for lunch and dinner. Portable drinking water did not arrive for several days, and we've been calling Florida and North Carolina to get an update on the status of the incarcerated who were caught in Hurricane Milton and Helene. Would you believe we are still running into no communications, blocked systems? We can't get access to people to find out what happened to those men and women who were incarcerated and confined when Helene hit and Milton came right behind us. So we're still waiting on an update, and we'll keep you posted as soon as we get it. How much do states spend on prisoners? Southern states spend the least per inmate and have some of the highest prison incarceration rates in the nation. States incarcerated more than 1 million people at the end of 2021, according to the Bureau of Prison, Bureau of Justice Statistics. To house them, state governments spent a combined $64 billion. Spending per prisoner varies more than tenfold across states, from just under $23,000 per person in Arkansas to $307,000 in Massachusetts. Spending in Massachusetts was more than double any other state. The Meridian state spent $64,000 per prison for the year. Massachusetts spent more than twice on each imprisoned person than does any other state. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, put in your pipe and you can smoke it, folks. Good morning. Our topic today is voting rights for returnees, their role in the upcoming election. And we have two folk or three folk joining us this morning. One has been a guest on a regular basis, Miss Nicole Porter from the Citizen Project. And he just completed a report that we will get into a little later in the show. Also joining us is Charles Thornton, the D.C. Correction Chairman of the D.C. Corrections Information Council. And of course, none other than Nkechi Taifa, the Stringer's co-host. That's the Nkechi. Boy, you were everywhere. We were together last week, folk, at the Kennedy Center for an opera. I've never seen an opera in my life. And I went to sleep for the first hour. I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And you wake up when it starts singing.
They don't never stop singing.
No, but it was enjoyable. It was called Fidelio. And we had a ball down there. And then we left there. And the next morning, we went to a country club. Nkechi, you got us hanging out in High Cotton. I'm not used to all this, the country club and the Kennedy Center. I don't know what to tell a warden when they say, where you been, Rozier?
But Voach, it's all related to social justice. And I just want to say your guest, Charles Thornton, will be with the couple Fox and Rob tomorrow, Wednesday, at the Martin Luther King Library as part of the Fidelio Opera, dealing with contemporary issues of imprisonment and justice related to what Beethoven did back with Fidelio. So hopefully folks will come out to the Kennedy Center. I know Voach, you and Martine will be there too. So Looking forward to it.
Yes.
So is that MLK?
Hmm?
I thought it was at MLK.
Yeah, did I say Kennedy? I'm sorry. It's hosted by the Kennedy Center, but it's at the Martin Luther King Jr. Library, 6 p.m. Okay. Wednesday, October 30th. Thanks, Martine.
And there's our other two guests. There's Charles Thornton and Dejuma Gaskins. Did I pronounce that right, sir?
Hey, sir, nice try. It's Danjuma Gaskins.
Danjuma. Well, okay, Danjuma. I like Dejuma. Let's go with Danjuma.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning.
How you doing? Thank you for joining us, brother. We got on the phone on the Zoom is Nicole Porter. She's with the Citizen Project. They just did a report on the voting rights of returnees and incarcerated. Also, our co-host is Nkechi Taifa, an attorney. And she's been co-hosting with us for a few years. So this morning, our topic is voting rights for returnees and their role in the upcoming election. I want to thank you, Charles Thornton, your turkey, for, boy, you always help us out, Charles. I called you, and you called this guy Dan Juma. Man, you something else. We need everybody we can get to the table because we got less than a few days or a week or less than a week, man, for this voting. I wish we'd have started a little earlier. So we'll start off with you first, Nicole. You're with the Citizen Project, and y'all just released a report called Locked Out 2024. 4 million denied voting rights due to a felony conviction. 4 million Americans will be unable to vote in the upcoming 2024 election due to felony disenfranchisement laws. Go ahead, Nicole. You want to give us an overview of what this report is about from the Citizen Project, please?
Good morning. Yes, I am honored to join you all today. and the opportunity about having this discussion with you, Roach, and with Charles and with Danjuma is that in DC, residents from DC sentenced to with felony convictions who are completing their sentence inside of prisons and jails can vote. So I'm looking forward to hearing about that and developments around that. That law passed in DC in 2020. DC is at the forefront of ending felony disenfranchisement. And when that law passed by the DC Council 4 years ago, DC joined two states, Maine and Vermont, and Puerto Rico, who also don't disenfranchise people completing their felony sentences while in prison custody. So we're gonna have a great conversation this morning. Just wanted to start that off with good news because the report that we released does emphasize who's locked out of voting this electoral cycle, which is 4 million. That has come down since 2020. And it's come down since the number of people disenfranchised peaked in 2016. It's declined by 31% since 8 years ago. Okay. And my math might be a little bit off there, 7 years ago. And the opportunity around that, the benefit because of that, is due to changes in state law, most notably in Florida, where more than a million people have gotten their voting rights back because of Amendment 4 a few years ago. Other states have expanded the vote to people after incarceration. This includes tens of thousands in New Jersey, New York, California, Minnesota, and New Mexico. And then, of course, as I started with, DC ended felony disenfranchisement. And so DC residents who are completing their felony sentence at the DC jail and also in the Federal Bureau of Prisons are voting this electoral cycle. So I'm looking forward to hearing any updates on that. Certainly Danjuma and Charles have been doing that work and making sure that DC residents are registered and can participate in absentee ballot voting if they're the BOP. And then there's a lot of great things happening at the DC jail and have been happening at the DC jail to guarantee ballot access for eligible voters at the jail. Okay. So that's where we are.
Get back with you. Charles, you told me this morning that you're all over the jail registering men and women over the jail to vote in the upcoming election. And ironically, we're doing a show on the day, and I was glad that you told me that Danjuma was there and what y'all doing. You want to give our listeners a little rundown of what it is that y'all are doing over at the jail for voter registration for the returnees and for those incarcerated?
Absolutely. And first, I want to thank you for asking me to come and be a part of your show this morning. And all your shows are very important, but this one, you know, based on the democracy, this is definitely very important to us. And what we're here doing this morning, we are actually right now located in the Department of Corrections. And we're doing early voting right now today, starting today.
At the DC jail.
At the DC jail. Yeah. So we're doing early voting. We're starting today. We'll be voting Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. You know, Mr. Gassens will speak more around the process. But it is early voting and it's also same day voting. And as Nicole mentioned, because of recent legislation, everyone in the jail, everyone in the Department of Corrections in Washington, D.C. can vote, no matter what your conviction is, no matter what how much time you have, you're eligible to vote. They've done a good job getting that word out in the facility. And so now we're doing our early voting. So Mr. Gaskin can talk more to you about the process of early voting and same day registration and voting.
Okay, Mr. Gaskin, you got it.
All right, good morning again. This process of being able to set up the early voting process in our facilities is done months in advance. The DOC is two facilities, actually. We have the jail and then we have CTF, the Central Treatment Facility.
Yeah.
Our jail can house, like today's population was over 1,500 male residents. We have over 350 residents in the CTF building. So it is a It is a massive operation.
Close to 2,000.
Yes, sir.
I mean,
I can get that count for you in a few moments, but probably about, probably over close to 100. Registration is day in. From the moment our residents come through the doors, we offer them the opportunity to register to vote. We also get the assistance of volunteers from community activists. The DC League of Women Voters assists us a lot as ongoing throughout the year. When it's voting time, it is a 3-day process, just like Mr. Thornton had mentioned, whereas we go to all of our units and ask them what they like to vote if they've already registered.
And how's the response been? Are they participating?
With this particular election, it is very big.
It's what?
And historically, as we have been doing this process, it continues to grow for the number of registered voters and those that participate as well.
So are the men come in? I missed the question. Are they participating? How's the turnout? Are men running to vote or whatever? What's their response to voting or not voting?
Oh, the response has been great. It continues to grow. Being that we are a same-day voting facility, we'll have those that have not registered to vote to come actually register and vote on that day. We also have I'm sure Mr. Thornton would get into as well. With this presidential election, we also have the ANC. We have an ANC for 7F08 who's actually housed in our facility.
Yeah.
And they're over both DOC and the Harriet Tubman facility. So that brings a big turnout as well.
What is the Harriet Tubman facility?
The Harriet Tubman facility is actually a woman's shelter that is across from the Department of Corrections.
That's the first I heard of that. Nicole mentioned that there's only four places that allow men and women to vote once you get locked up. That's Maine, Vermont, D.C., and she just mentioned Puerto Rico. Question, since all of D.C. prisoners are sent to the federal system, are they eligible to vote even though they're not located in D.C., but they got the right to vote, but they've been housed in another facility in Texas, California, New York? So can these men and women who've been sent out of D.C. to another prison, a federal facility, can they vote while they're in a federal institution in the D.C. election?
Absolutely. And it's our job at the Corrections Information Council to work through the Bureau of Prisons as well as the D.C. Board of Elections and get the information to the individuals that are housed in the BOP prisons throughout the country that, you know, D.C. residents in those facilities are eligible to vote. So we have a process where we actually, and it's their vote, they vote through absentee ballots. And it's our process to get ballots to the institutions. Right now, there are about 54 institutions that house D.C. residents.
54.
122 BOP prisons. 54 of the prisons house D.C. residents. So, you know, and that goes all the way from Florida to California. So, again, we work through the D.C. Board of Elections and the Corrections Information Council to get the information to these facilities and the Board of Election get the ballots out. Now, it's still a work in process. We've been doing this, I think, since 2020. With that emergency legislation that was put in place. And to date, when we do reports after every election, the last report, and it's definitely online at the Corrections Information Council, we had about 800 registered for the BOP, all the different-
800 inmates registered while in the BOP.
BOP, right? And you can check through the Board of Elections. We can get that information of how many are actually registered to date. And then we try to monitor registrations with the individuals who actually vote. So-
And what was those demographics like in terms of those who actually voted?
So And again, you know, don't quote me on this. We can check back through the Board of Elections. But in the primary, there was, in the primary, we had about, I believe it was close to 400 BOP actual votes that came from really the primary.
Yeah.
Right? How many DC residents are in the BOP?
Currently, there's a tad bit under maybe like 2,300 DC
residents. You have 800 registered?
Right, which is
that's very good.
That's a no-man's
land.
Even the fact that of the registered voters, the 400, that's 50% of the folks that were registered, which is well beyond what the community does.
That's right, it sure is.
Way, way beyond what the community. And we can check fact these numbers with the Board of Elections and Corrections Information Council.
I'll take your word, man. You on top of it. I ain't got to check nothing, Charles. If you say it, I'll take your word, man. Ain't that right?
I don't
want
to check it. I don't want to check it, but I would love information to be able to cite to it and share with others.
So there's 2,300 currently DC inmates currently confined in the federal system. Question. How do you get the ballots to them, and how did the ballots come back from the prison back to the Board of Election or to whomever have to receive them? Because that's a monumental task. If they are located in 54 institutions, 2,300 people scattered all across America, how do we get that information of voting the ballots back? And also, do they use mail-in ballots? Can they mail in their ballots, they vote?
And how do they deal with the issue of privacy in terms of the guards, you know, going through the mail and all that, the security aspect of that?
So that's about three questions I'm going to try to get right in. Right? So in terms of the privacy, the ballots is treated like legal mail. So it's legal mail in the gotcha. BOP. So it's open in the presence of the resident. It's right. treated like legal mail, right? So That's how they deal with the, you know, the privacy issue, right?
But Charles, can we put a plug for a second? Because my Yuki's on for the pitch and you answer the other two questions. Is that okay, Roach? Because absolutely. I know we got to deal with this, you know.
Yeah, come on. Come on, my Yuki.
Stays alive so we can bring them back.
Yeah. Come on, my Yuki. We got she's our pitch partner. You got it, my Yuki.
Thank you so much for bringing me in. I want to get back to this engaging conversation, but this is a very, very important show. And we're hoping that you, as you're listening, you will support it. Roach Brown, Martine, Nkechi do an extraordinary job highlighting a marginalized perspective. Returning citizens often face challenges that mainstream media rarely covers, like this issue about voting, like barriers to employment, housing, and reintegration. Crossroads addresses these directly, giving a voice to those who are often marginalized in public discourse. Practical guidance and resources Crossroads also provides. This show covers topics that help returning citizens navigate the challenges of reentering, offering insights into legal rights, available resources, and community support services. This is the caliber of show that is here at WPFW. Roach Brown is a source of inspiration just on his own. And if you appreciate all the hard work he does, if you appreciate all the insight this panel provides for you, please support it. We're looking for 5 new listeners per hour, 5 people who've been listening to WPFW for whatever amount of time, whether it be a day, week, month, year, 47 years, and have yet to make that crossover from being a listener to becoming a member supporter. We would really appreciate if you would consider supporting something as important as Crossroads by making your pledge of support. And you can do it so easily. Become a sustainer. You sustain other things. You sustain your phone or your internet, or you engage in streaming services. Make WPFW and Crossroads and Roach Brown, Martine, and Kichi part of your streaming service. Promise us $12.50 a month. That's what? Divided by, it's like $3 a week. Promise WPFW that, you know, the $12.50 a month you may pay on something more ephemeral. Take that same $12.50 and invest it into something enduring, something like Crossroads, something like Roach Brown, something like WPFW. $12.50 a month. Hopefully, you know, you won't even feel it, but will mean $150 to WPFW for the year, $150 to Roach, who's got a goal of $500 between now and 11 o'clock. We can do it. We can do it together, but it really requires you to go to the phone at 202-588-9739 1-800-222-9739 or go to the website at wpfwfm.org or use Cash App. Cash App is $WPFWFM. Make sure you put Crossroads on there. However you do it, please do it. New people, renewing people, we welcome you all. Please join and support this great journalism,
thank you.
This show. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayuki. And the fact, again, we need your help to stay on the air. Folks who are listening to the show, we got a lot of buddies with deep pockets. Man, we asked for a few $100. This ain't no money to put up to keep us on the air. The question that comes to my mind is, with Kamala Harris and Donald Trump going through the election, and it says tight, depending on what poll you're looking at, as close or as not close. And we know that back in 94, when Marion Barry got released from prison, we mobilized the returning citizen voting bloc to get Marion back in office as the mayor. So he was the first mayor that got arrested, that came out of prison, and got reelected using the vote of the ex-offender. And your report from the Citizen Project, Locked Out, it's called Locked Out 2024, 4 million denied voting rights due to a felony conviction. You're saying that we got 4 million people, Nicole, who are being denied the right to vote, even though most states now have been trying to relax the laws to give guys and the opportunity to vote if they're on parole or probation or whatever. So you're saying we got 4 million people who've been disenfranchised completely?
Yeah, 4 million people who are disenfranchised as of this election cycle. That is down from when it peaked, the disenfranchisement rate peaked in 2016, but there are people disenfranchised, lifetime disenfranchisement in states like Florida, Kentucky, and Tennessee, even despite reforms. So it shows how much change there still needs to be. There continues to be a disproportionate impact on the Black electorate in particular. This cycle, 1 out of 22 Black Americans who of voting age are disenfranchised due to a felony conviction. That's national. There's history around this, right? I mean, this is a holdover from Jim Crow following Reconstruction, when Southern states adopted felony disenfranchising schemes to intentionally undermine Black men from voting. In representative democracy, white supremacist elites adopted these practices in state constitutions from Mississippi to Virginia, specifically with the goal in mind of undermining and excluding Black men from the electorate. Of course, it was men at the time. Women, no woman was allowed to vote, including Black women. And these policies grew as the era of mass incarceration took hold in the early 70s. So the number of people disenfranchised due to a felony skyrocketed right along with the number of people with felony skyrocketing, not just people in prison, but also people in the community on felony probation and completing their sentences on parole.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Charles. You want to say something, Charles?
Yes, sir. I want to throw in, and I think Nicole hit it spot on with the Jim Crow era rules that were put in place. As most folks know, you know, home rule for the district was a real big event. And it was really after home rule. You mentioned it and you didn't give it real good, because what was done after home rule, as we all know, our second mayor of the district was Marion Barry. He became mayor in 1979. He won his election. He was the second elected mayor for the District of Columbia. The first piece of legislation that was signed into law by Marion Barry was legislation that was introduced by Arrington Dixon.
And
it gave incarcerated men and women that were convicted of misdemeanors the right to vote, as well as it removed all the disenfranchisement for folks on the street who were on probation, parole, or whatever. So that was done. It was introduced by Arrington Dixon, signed into law by Mayor Burr in 1980, with no idea that he would be returning from incarceration in 1994.
And it benefited that law.
that he passed, signed would be the law that would be used to get him back in office. And I think
I'm glad to see, man. You know your history, Charles. I mean, you're brilliant. I didn't know that in 1979 I worked on Mayor Washington's campaign, and
you were on the wrong team.
No, we was on the right team. I worked on Murray's team and Mayor Washington.
Both of them, okay.
So we was on both. We split the fence. So whoever won, we was covered. So Murray got in, and it was called Public Law -1779. Mm-hmm. One of the things that came out of that, Charles, is that it's mind-blowing. As we're sitting here talking now about voting rights all over the country, you were one of the directors of the Office of Marketing, the Mayor's Office of Returning Citizens. I was the first director. Mm-hmm. And what you all been doing right now is all over this country that I forgot what I was talking about, man. See that?
DC is like a pacemaker for what happens across the country. And you, Roach, and you, Charles, were the visionaries, not just for DC, but the inspiration for all over the country. That's what you were going to say, Roach.
Well, thank you, Nikisha. Wow. See that? I need you with me, Nikisha, because I don't know what I'm talking about.
we surely followed your footsteps over here at the DC jail and making sure that the residents here who were eligible to vote. They had been eligible for quite some time.
Yes.
But, there was not a lot of push to make sure that there was a process in place. And we began this process in the early 90s. We started coming in. And I would be remiss if I did not mention the Board of Election and Monica Evans and the job that their team has done from day one. Because what I found out there, it takes compassionate people. It takes people who want to get this done.
Yeah.
And if you got compassionate people in the right places that want to get this done, it's cakework. So through, the Board of Elections and the staff at the jail, we've been able to do it, real, real smoothly. And it's a model. Now we're working on that model for the BOP, which has its challenges. You asked me the question in reference to the BOP. How do they get their ballots? How do the mail goes out? And I'm going to flag this. There was recently, and it's through the mail. So we mail the ballots from the Board of Elections to the institutions, and we count on those institutions, executive assistants, wardens, to make sure that the DC residents get those ballots. Now, again, they are the registrations and the ballots. Now, as I mentioned, it's treated as legal mail. So it has to be open, right in front of the resident. The
presence of the inmate.
The resident, Now, recently, there's been some, in Atwater, there was some mail that came in, legal mail, that was tainted with fentanyl. And one of the corrections officers that opened that mail died. That's putting a glitch in this process.
A damper.
So
I didn't even hear about that.
I want to flag it because it's forthcoming. What I've been told is that there's going to be some changes on the whole mail system. Mail as a result,
this is for the federal system.
So I think it's going to affect the way that we do our mail-in voting as well.
Maybe with the internet and all the other advanced technology, a lot of folks don't use mail, period, anymore. So maybe there'll be some other way of doing it electronically. I don't know. What do you think about that, Charles?
Well, I'm for all of the technology and making, especially using it for the better use of the community. One of the things I will flag, though, is that internet connections as it relates to prisons, and residents having access to that internet, that's we haven't crossed that yet. But there are ways that we can use technology to do this. So there's definitely going to have to be some revamping and some conversations, because I expect to have some real problems moving forward with the mail system as a result of the deaths in Atwater.
I was in the federal system, and I know how terrible the mail system is, man. And that's why I asked a question previously about, do they register and mail their ballots out or straight from the institution? Is there one place that they mail their ballots to, the Board of Election or two? Because I know Charlie and Pauline Sullivan, mm-hmm. who used to be over the jail working. And in fact, I send my prayers out to Charlie and Pauline. We haven't heard from them in a while.
I'll see them tomorrow. I'll let them know.
Tell him I said hi to Charles, please.
And tell him Merry Christmas from me, Charles, because I ain't seen him, man. I thought something happened.
Yeah, tell him we're asking about him. Yeah.
Long distance runners, boy.
You know, one of the questions pop up is, you got a lot of men in the shelters
mm-hmm.
who got criminal records, and a lot of them think they can't vote because they don't have a stable address.
Mm-hmm.
So how's y'all addressing this particular issue for those men and women who are in shelters?
Mm-hmm.
who want to vote, but they don't have a legitimate address for the return mail.
So one of the things, Roger, you know, you've been a part of this way before I had, right? And it's the community. It's activists like yourself, advocates, that really have to get the word out. So one of the things, at one point when I was at the Office of Returning Citizens, we were allowing individuals to use that address.
Wow.
For voting purposes. So if you
use your office as a vote,
right? If you were homeless and you didn't have an address, you could use our address. Now I don't know that that's the case now, but that was you know what we did to address that, you know. So again, and the other things, we went to the shelters, and that, again, the Board of Election does a hell of a job. They go out to the shelters and register people. You can use the address of the shelter that you're in. They will send your voting registration card back to that shelter. If it comes back to them because you have left, then they take a third step and try to find the resident, you know, where that person moved to.
Yeah,
from
yeah.
the shelter. But again, it's a good block too. If you recall, in 2008, during Obama's first run, you know, we went to all the shelters, and it was a strong, strong block, the shelters, when we were working to try to get Obama into the office,
yeah,
president. So, you know, but it's always a challenge as well.
Dan Juma, how did you get involved in this, man? This is the first I'm hearing of you. I used to come over to jail on a lot. You look like one of my old cell partners, man. How did you get involved with this?
I came to the Department of Corrections in 2002, uh-huh. really working with the Maryland Department of Youth Services.
Okay.
Yes. So it was the opportunity. I took it. My main position was working with inmate grievances. So I was already working to ensure that their rights are being upheld while they're in this institution. Mm-hmm. And as a part of my responsibilities, I was the voter liaison. So I have direct communication with the Board of Elections throughout. I'm responsible for ensuring that our registration applications from our residents get to the Board of Elections. So it's been great work.
So you work for the Board of Elections?
Say that again, sir?
You work for the Board of Elections?
No, I work for DOC.
So
I'm just their liaison mm-hmm. I just serve as the liaison for the department with the Board of Elections.
So Nicole, you may remember this, and Roach, what happened, and when we put the emergency legislation in, it created a position
yes.
at the Department of Corrections for voter liaison. That was
beautiful.
Part of some emergency legislation that was put in place back in 2020, and then it became law in 2022, and it created a specific position for a voter liaison at the Department of Corrections. So that's how that position became.
You know what, man? DC leads the country in a whole lot of areas.
Absolutely.
And this is the first I heard of this, Charles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm questioning, is any other state doing the same thing to register homeless people and all they copying the system that y'all put into place? Anybody can answer that? Because I'd like to know. Go ahead, Nicole.
There are best practices around allowing unhoused people to use addresses, including it varies from state to state, but the goal being to allow unhoused people to register to vote using an address given the fact that they're unhoused and the fact that they may not have a stable address. So those practices are in place in places like California, Illinois, and Colorado. I also say that a best practice is what's happening at the DC jail in bringing the election infrastructure into the correctional facility, given concerns y'all have discussed around mail and given the future around mail going into correctional facilities, jails, and prisons, given a lot of the issues. There's been a whole trend around privatizing mail and electronically scanning it, so not allowing people to physically access mail that's being sent to them if they're in custody. And so with that, bringing polling stations into the correctional facility is a best practice. That's in place in DC at the DC jail. It's also in place in a handful of other localities around the country, including Cook County, where Chicago is, Harris County, where Houston is. BOP, now it's a diffuse system, but given the mail issues, given the fact that there are DC residents throughout the Federal Bureau of Prisons, there's a couple of issues that the BOP could deal with. First of all, people shouldn't be sent so far from DC. That's been an ongoing
issue. That 500 mile radius.
They should be closer to the district so that when the elections happen, election infrastructure can be taken into the facility to guarantee people's access to the ballot. So BOP has a responsibility to make sure that eligible voters can access the ballot, and they should be working with the BOE, DC BOE, to make sure that there's better practices in place so that DC voters can access the ballot from behind the walls.
Randy Keechee.
I'm sorry. I just want to say, just as DC voters are accessing the ballot, callers are calling in and accessing WPFW Crossroads Roach. We only got 60. We let me thank some people while we're waiting for my
YouTube.
Come on. Renee Bowser, who's one of our programmers, one of our new programmers, has donated to Crossroads from Washington, D.C. And she says, show is so important for a community that needs to be focused on. Absolutely. Juanita Wright from Washington, D.C. has donated. Anonymous, a first-time donor, a new donor, has donated Crossroads as well. Boy, we only got a couple of hundred to go. I know we can do this for Crossroads so that Charles can
come on
and Danjuma can continue their work, and Nicole can continue their work, and Roach can just bring them all back on the show. Mayuki, I'm not sure if she's there or not.
I'm right here. I want to thank you so much for announcing that. You also got another pledge from Michelle on Cash App. So Anonymous has got us started for our new. We only need four more new members, four more people who've been listening to WPFW for whatever amount of time. It's time for you to step up, 202-588-9739. Crossroads educates listeners about social and economic struggles faced by returning citizens, inspiring community and support in action. You saw Renee Bowser, as Nikichi said, one of WPFW's own programmers who is that caliber of a person. Not only does she have a show, but she invests in other shows here on the air. And you can empower yourselves by making sure that WPFW stays vital. 202-588-9739, 1-800-222-9739. We also have the website at wpfwfm.org and Cash App. Cash App is $WPFW. Put Crossroads on it. Support Crossroads. Support WPFW. Support Roach and Martine and Nikichi and all these wonderful guests that he brings. I mean, Roach gets people from around the world to talk about and gives spotlight on different issues, the returning citizens that the mainstream media just doesn't touch. So please, Merry Christmas to all. Make sure that Roach has a Merry Christmas.
He only has you just took my line, Nick. You know, my Yuki.
He only has a couple more minutes remaining, 17 more minutes to go. He came up short the last couple of weeks, and he's trying to catch up. So if we could just get $500 or $600 more, it will be golden. 202-588-9739. Again, a sustainer. Two or three sustainers, just doing $12.50 a month. You just give your credit card information or bank account information. We will only take out $12.50 a month. Three of you doing that, Roach will be golden, and he would have made gold, and he'll get credit for the whole $150, but you only have to do $12.50 a month. And again, looking for four more new people, four more people who say, okay, I've been listening, and I'm ready to become part of the family. 202-588-9739.
You know, one of the things, thanks a lot, Mayuki. We need the help, folks. If you're listening, please make a donation or contribution to keep us on the air, because we can't stay on the air without you making a donation. I want to throw this out to everybody. When Myron Barry came out of jail and we got the returning citizens mobilized the vote, one of the things that we used was the families. If we got 8 million people in prison, I mean, and returning 5 million returning citizens in the street that can't vote. For those men and women that's in prisons that can't vote, those states that don't allow you to vote while you're incarcerated, get your mother, your sister, your wife, your brother, your cousin, your grandmother. Everybody got 2.3 families. So if you got 1 million people, we're looking at 2.5 to 3 million people if you can get your families to vote. And one of the things that got me a little perturbed is what's going on a national level with Kamala and Donald Trump and where they're coming down on our young lady, Angela also Brooks. I've worked for Mayor Washington in 1979 and did his commercials and did the same thing for Myron Barry. I've never in 38 years seen anybody be ostracized and be belittled, degraded, and crushed at the way we're seeing this being done to Angela also Brooks. I know her, knew her as a little kid. I know her father, her mother. We grew up together. I know her spirit. And at the end of our show, we say, your inner voice is never wrong. Her inner voice is locked into where we're coming from. And I've never in my life as a TV producer, radio host, etc., seen this level of attack mm-hmm. on a young sister, you know, and I know her personally, and I know that that stuff about the money and that kind of, folks, you say it and you leave it alone, but she's being crushed, and the billionaires are putting in all this money. So that tells you something. For all the guys that are looking, some of the guys call us, why should I vote? I'm in jail. I got 30 years. You got 30 years because somebody made the law to give you that kind of time. Mm-hmm. We're talking about putting people in office that can change some of these laws. So you have to vote and exercise your constitutional right to do this. And I'm telling you, it really hurts to see this kind of thing coming down, how they attacked them. Also, at the debate that Trump and Kamala had, not one word did we hear about criminal justice.
Absolutely.
Nothing about criminal justice. We don't know what their position is or the plan is on them. And they got 8 days to go before they make an election. They talking about the IRA, the second chance, the compassion release. All that. Hey, we can change the laws. All you guys that's listening in these cell blocks and prisons all across the country and America that can vote, listen to what we're saying. If you want to get out of prison, you're in prison because of a law. Somebody had to submit that bill and introduce that legislation. If you vote, we got over 35 million Black people in America who haven't been enfranchised that we can vote. So we got to pull these people together. If we can change this, because we can change this Black and brown dynamic if everybody vote. And stop telling me that he gave you $1,400. That's juggy boogie, man. That was already in the process coming down.
Right.
And Trump didn't give it to you because it was already legislated and was coming down through the pike. And Nancy Pelosi and a couple more had a big hand in that. So if somebody gave you $1,400 3 years ago and you said you can vote for them, that $1,400 won't even do you nothing right now. You can't even hardly spend it. You know, and that's the wrong reasons, man. We need to change these laws to get our people out of prison, and the politicians are the ones who make the laws and can change the laws to make it a little better that our folks can get out of here. So we have, this is the only one of the ways that we as returning citizens and families and friends of returning citizens or incarcerated can make a difference. Vote, 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 vote.
Very well said.
Vote.
That's it. Hey, Mrs. Brown, one of the things Nicole mentioned was the process. And we're talking about money now. And I wanted to bring Mr. Gaskins and let him explain the whole, you know, from the observers here. Right now we got, you know, election observers, poll workers, right?
And over the jail now.
Over the jail. But I want him to explain to you who those people are.
Definitely. Those poll workers actually are residents of our facility as well.
Uh-huh.
So our residents, they are trained in partnership with the Board of Elections.
Do they get paid?
And they get paid. Absolutely.
Yes,
how much do they get, Charles?
$250, you know, which is a yeoman's pay. You know,
that's an upper income bracket. If you're in jail, that's an upper income bracket.
The same that you get in the community.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. So,
the goal of our facility is to actually mirror the same type of polling experience that you will have when you're in the community. So the election workers are trained by the Board of Elections, the same type of training that they would go through in the community. We do have some safeguards in place as far as ensuring that there's no issues with any other residents that are here. But they work each station just like they were in the community.
Wow.
That's awesome. That's good. Great.
You know, Charles, you've been on the forefront of a lot of this stuff, Charles. I mean, you're blowing me. I wasn't aware of this particular piece. Since there's three other states, Maine, Vermont, and Puerto Rico, brother, that allow men and women to vote inside the institution. The model that y'all putting together here in D.C., have that been expanded, or you're using this in those three states that allow men and women to vote? And what problems are they having? Because I know this is a cumbersome job, man, to get people registered, get them to vote, then you turn them out, then they turn out to vote, or get them out to vote.
So just a clarification, people sentenced to felonies and completing their felonies can vote in the jurisdictions we've been talking about today, D.C., Puerto Rico, Maine, and Vermont. People who are in custody pre-trial can vote if they're in jail custody during an election cycle. That's also in D.C. for anybody who may be in pre-trial, but also in most of the jails across, well, in all of the jails across the country, pre-trial who aren't sentenced yet are allowed to vote while incarcerated. That's important because it's hundreds of thousands of people across the country.
I was going to go in the kitchen.
No, but just real quick, what you said, Nicole, that's true, but there's not a lot of situations like there is in D.C. that will actually help and make sure they get those ballots and are registered and all like that.
D.C. is certainly a model, but there's a growing number of jails that are putting in place best practices.
Okay.
Elections officials from across jurisdictions are in conversation with each other. It's been very inspiring to see DC election officials so motivated to talk to their counterparts and other jurisdictions around the country and share the best practices that are in place in DC so that local election officials in Denver and Oklahoma City and Seattle, Washington also can adopt best practices to guarantee ballot access for eligible voters who are in jail custody and those localities as well.
And Roach, I think part of your question was, is it happening? And as Nicole said, there's definitely a whole lot, you know, in terms of best practices. She's mentioned the states that are definitely in the forefront of making sure that folks understand that if you have not been convicted, you can vote. As she mentioned, Cook County, the same thing they're doing there in terms of registering and voting people. One of the things I would say, though, is that this process, especially to my knowledge, in the other states that you mentioned, Maine and Vermont, I don't know that there's a process in place in Maine and Vermont, especially in the federal.
We're studying that now because it's important for secure facilities like prisons to also have best practices in place. So just wanted to let you all know that, which we can come back and talk about that.
Let me do this, Charles. We ran out of time. I'd like to invite y'all back next week. Next week is the date of the election, November the 5th. So I'd like to invite y'all right back, and we stay right on top of this election thing that's coming down on November the 5th. If y'all all agree, we'd like to invite you back next Tuesday.
We'll go
back and deal with this a little further, because November the 5th is the election. Yeah. And I'd like to have y'all back in so we can give us an update and a report on what's going on locally and nationally in the election. I want to thank Nicole Porter from the Citizen Project, the Juma Gaskins. Is that said right, partner?
Danjuma.
Danjuma.
I like Danjuma.
I like that name, man. Okay. I see we got the same barber, brother.
all three of y'all.
All three of y'all. Charles, too. Thank you, Nikichi and Charles Thornton and my beautiful wife, Mertine. We'd like to invite y'all back for next Monday, the same time, next Tuesday, the election day, so we can stay delve a little deep in it. So I want to thank y'all for joining us. And then we throw it right back to Mayuki, because we still got to raise some money. Thanks, Charles, Nicole, and Dan Juma, and Nikichi. We'll see you next week. And Merry Christmas to all of you.
Merry Christmas to all of you. And let's make sure that Roach can continue having Merry Christmases here on the air, folks.
got now 2 minutes remaining, and we still need to get the goal. The number is 202-588-9739, 1-800-222-9739. You all started off beautifully and then got so engaged in the conversation, you stopped calling. Please go back to the phones and call us now, 202-588-9739, 1-800-222-9739. Crossroads connects listeners with local organizations, job programs, and reentry resources that aid returning citizens. Crossroads is talk about voting, how every vote counts, every pledge counts. It lets the administration know how important this show is, and it ensures that WPFW stays afloat. Looking for four people who have yet to make a pledge to WPFW for whatever amount of time. Looking for you to step up and make a pledge as generously as you can to PFW by becoming a sustainer. You can do it quickly and easily. Folks, we only have now $200 to go. It is within our reach. We can do this. Please don't let Roach. You can please make sure that Roach has a Merry Christmas all the time and that we acknowledge the work of Roach and Martine and Nikidze. 202-588-9739. I've got to go off now because we have to continue the show, but I trust that you're going to your phone and you're not going to leave Roach hanging. 202-588-9739, WPFWFM.org, Cash App, $WPFW, looking for your support for Roach Brown and Crossroads.
Fall is a time of change and impermanence. What never changes is WPFW's unwavering commitment to providing reliable news, informative public affairs, and exceptional music that inspires both action and introspection. From October 14th through November 3rd, we celebrate The Circle Unbroken, 47 years of being in the community with WPFW during our fall pledge drive. We invite you to be in community and solidarity with us by making a donation at WPFWFM.org to ensure that this independent grassroots media outlet not only survives, but thrives. It is with your generous support that we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The Kennedy Center's Let's Go There series uses opera to examine contemporary issues. In Beethoven's Fidelio, the husband suffers political imprisonment and his wife impersonates a prison guard to free him. Imprisonment and freedom will be explored in a panel discussion moderated by Nikichi Taifa, featuring Fox and Rob, the inspiring couple from the documentary Time, Danielle Cho, Washington National Opera cellist, and Charles Thornton of the D.C. Corrections Information Council. Acclaimed tenor Chasmin Williams Ali will also perform excerpts from Fidelio. The free event and reception will be held Wednesday, October 30th, from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at the MLK Junior Library, located at 901 G Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C.
We're back! WPFW is excited to announce the return of the Social Justice Calendar, your go-to weekly update on the latest events, actions, and initiatives promoting equity, justice, and change across our community. The calendar's mission is to connect you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Each week, we'll spotlight rallies, workshops, forums, and community actions happening across the region. If you have an event to share, submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of said event in a format that is no longer than a sentence or two, on Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, at least 2 weeks in advance of your event date. Space is limited, so submissions are considered in the order that they are received. The Social Justice Calendar is yet another way that WPFW connects, engages, and uplifts our community as we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! Think about how much you've relied on Democracy Now! And its birthplace, WPFW, this year. Democracy Now! Began in WPFW's Adams Morgan Studios as an election year program that brought analysis and spoke truth to power. Just as Democracy Now! Continues to do today, 27 years later, as an independent, unembedded, international investigative news hour. The global team of journalists you hear on Democracy Now! Brings you the events and voices of those attempting to create a just world and reports on the most daunting and heartbreaking issues facing humanity. Freedom is not free, but it's vital to the world we want to inhabit. Your financial gift ensures that WPFW can bring Democracy Now! To you live Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 a.m. each weekday morning. Go to WPFWFM.org, that's WPFWFM.org, to make a secure, tax-deductible contribution now. That's WPFWFM.org, PFWFM.org. And thank you so much.
Hi, this is Tom.